Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, January 14th, 2006, into the new year. And my name is Marcia Mary Baker. And today's show, we're addressing something that I know is on the minds of millions here and hundreds of millions abroad. What on earth is behind the what we see from the White House? Its drive for torture, for war, for domestic spying, and what's behind Dick Cheney? What's behind the demand to have a man like Alito on the Supreme Court? And Mr. LaRouche himself, who gave a webcast and it, with an international dialogue on January the 11th, said, "Remember, Hitler didn't create himself." And that's what we've invited guests here in the studio to discuss. I'll mention about that more, but I want to welcome them here today, and also the LaRouche Youth Movement representative from the West Coast that's with us. I'll start with him. Joe Elkins, are you there in Los Angeles?
Yeah, hello, Marcia.
Hi. And here in the studio from the EIR News Service intelligence staff, we have Cynthia Rush. Welcome, Cynthia.
Hi.
And next to me, Tony Papert. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Marcia.
So I think we're all well connected. And the last two people, Cynthia and Tony, have been part of a team that's ongoing for some time. Tony can say why it's called the Synergy Research Task Force or whatever it's called in a minute. But they were involved in putting out material in recent weeks that in the last week came out in the form of a special mass circulation document put out by LaRouche PAC, the Political Action Committee. And before that, a lot of this research appears in a couple of dossiers in the Executive Intelligence Review. And this mass circulation document, 25 pages, is called Children of Satan 4, Cheney's Schmittlerian Drive for Dictatorship. And it says in a banner headline, "Keep Fascist Alito Off the Supreme Court." And I mention that because it just came out a few days ago. And that it has in it the need to know kind of information of what is behind Dick Cheney, what is behind the kinds of things I was just discussing. And you need to know it in order to know what to do, because let me just say this about this time period. LaRouche on January 11th did compare it. He's done this before, to the period in which Hitler came in 1933 and then was consolidated in 1934, thanks to those who backed him and people, good people not doing what they should, but very wicked people taking charge. And so this pamphlet, it's being distributed in mass numbers. Dozens of thousands have been printed. And LaRouche himself this weekend is going to be addressing youth brigades that are meeting in one on the West Coast in Seattle in a weekend retreat, a cadre school, and here on the East Coast in Washington, D.C. He'll be doing that within 24 hours. And what's happening is a saturation distribution of this in and around Capitol Hill, around Washington, in the West Coast, other parts of this country, here on Martin Luther King weekend, while Congress may be recessed. But they're coming back on Wednesday. And there'll be, on that day, there has been a Democratic caucus called, Democratic Party caucus, and the vote on Alito for the Supreme Court in the committee, the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, has been on hold for a week, according to Senator Patrick Leahy yesterday on Friday, January 13th. So that there's not a reason to think this particular Supreme Court nomination is a done deal and it'll go through. There's no reason to take anything for granted. Things are really changing. And so we want to turn to Tony and Cynthia in a minute about what is this Schmittlerian? What are we talking about here, especially when it comes to fascist economics? And we can see why in a minute. But first on distributing this, Joe Elkins is part of the gang leading the charge in Los Angeles. And Joe, why don't you say what you're up to out there? What's your perspective?
Well, here in California, we've got a pretty interesting approach, pretty interesting situation. We have both of the flanks that we attacked in the Children of Satan 4 directly embedded in the situation that we're in with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So you've got, on the one side, his Schultz background, the controller of Arnie.
George Schultz,
right. And on the other side, you've got this Felix Rohatyn, you know, this banking synarchist kind of background, which we get, which I guess we'll get to in a little while. But it's very exciting because kind of, you know, these are the two things which we're having to take on now, similar to what we had to do a year ago when we had the Social Security fight to save Social Security from being privatized by Bush. And we had to preempt it here in California where Arnie was trying to essentially, you know, lead the way for the nation by turning California. So, again, we're out here trying to do, in a miniaturized version, what has to be done nationwide. And so we're up against the exact same enemy.
Right, and we'll get to that, especially Felix Rohatyn, as you say, George Schultz, and so forth, and on the record, the case of Chile, and so. But so you're trying to get out
about 150,000 pamphlets total. We've built up a lot of inventory recently, and despite having a very large field and a very large field deployment into the population in Los Angeles and also branching out to other cities, we want to kind of go into a rush distribution of everything that we've got, just have a full saturation of the whole area. We've got about 20 million people here in Los Angeles in the metro area. And what we're going for is to really use Lynn's conception, LaRouche's conception of dynamics to shift what's happening with the political fight. And I think I've got one thing that'll be fun. I can mention it in a little while. We'll show how this thing is supposed to work. But what we're trying to do is get out 150,000 of these things. We got out yesterday on our first day of this kind of blitz. We got out 10,000 copies of this new Children of Satan pamphlet.
That's great. That's terrific. Well,
total yesterday, we actually got out 30,000.
All over, you mean total California or West Coast?
Total, including all the other pamphlets, even going back to the Recreate pamphlet of Recreate Our Economy.
That's terrific. Definitely we want to hear more. So let's turn in a minute, though, or let's turn right now. I'd like to turn to Tony Papert, who helped really edit or pull together all this kind of what you're getting out, what you're just talking about, who's first. I have it here in my hands, and I'm making a pitch for it. Everyone should look on the www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, and they can see this or arrange to get it. But the very first article is called Judge Samuel Alito and the Führer Prinzip. But Tony, what's in this document? What are you up to?
What's in this document is the showing the way that the Cheney dictatorship, which seems to be going on now in the United States, is a knowing copy. It's not so much that Cheney is knowing, but the people behind him are completely knowing. It's a knowing copy of the Hitler government and the other fascist governments of the 20th century. As you quoted Lynn on the webcast on the 11th, saying that Hitler was evil, but he didn't create himself, and he didn't. I mean, he was evil, but he wasn't the origin of Nazism or of fascism. Fascism is only, we use fascism in general, discussion obviously is a name for all these Nazi-type governments and tendencies, but this was really just a name which Mussolini gave his movement in the early 20s. The actual idea and the movement and the genesis of Mussolini's own movement, is much older. The fascist governments in Italy, Germany, Spain, Portugal, Romania, Austria, in the early 20th century, all occurring roughly at the same time, they weren't spontaneous growths in these countries. They were closely coordinated by a secret international committee of financiers, which called itself the Synarchy, or the Synarchist International, which was really the proper term covering all of this stuff rather than fascism, which was just a later name for the Italian variety. And it goes back to the end of the 18th century, to the period leading up to the abortive French Revolution of the 1780s, when the British intelligence out of London wanted to ensure that the American experiment, the American Republic, wouldn't be successfully imitated on the continent of Europe. And the country which was closest to doing that was France. A great many Americans were engaged also in trying to enable the French to, in different circumstances, duplicate the American Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, in their own way. The British were determined to see that that wouldn't happen. And they inspired a secret mystical Freemasonic order called the Martinist Order, mostly centered in Lyon, France, in the 1770s and 1780s, under figures like Cagliostro, the magician, Mesmer, and pseudoscientist who was exposed by Benjamin Franklin, Casanova, the famous...
Lover boy.
And Joseph de Maistre, a man you might not have heard about, but a man whom Isaiah Berlin, the late British historian, called the first fascist. These guys intervened in the French Revolution. They were largely successful for the fact that it turned into a bloody charade, and then ultimately the dictatorship of Napoleon I, and then finally Napoleon III. They were active throughout the 19th century. And at the end of the century, they gave this effort for the first time the name Synarchy. And it was this international Synarchy, this International Committee of Bankers, which was responsible for these fascist administrations one after another. And it continued, even though the inspiration was from London, the effort continued to be centered in France through certain French bankers. And when you get to the beginning of the 20th century through the present day, the company of Lazare Frères or Lazare Brothers, which is Paris Lazare Frères, New York City Lazare Frères with Felix Rohatyn, and London, it's called Lazare Brothers. It functions as one entity between the three places. And in the 20th century, there's no question that this Lazare Brothers, Lazare Frères Bank, of which Felix Rohatyn is now the most notable figure in the United States, was the immediate agency behind the establishment of these fascist governments. I mean, this is documented in numerous reports of American intelligence. For instance, most people don't realize it, but the U.S. had an embassy in Vichy France. Vichy France was the fascist French government which ruled southern France after the Nazis had conquered France. The Nazis directly ruled northern France. The French fascists, called the Vichy government, ruled southern France. Now, Roosevelt had an ambassador to Vichy France. It was very controversial. But the reason he actually, Admiral Leahy, his personal aide, was the ambassador. The reason he had an ambassador was to know what was going on there, for the most part. And what Leahy and the other U.S. officials wrote back is, the Vichy fascist government is Lazare, but it's clear that Lazare is also controlling the moves from the Nazi side to a significant extent, also from Spain, also from Italy. So, I mean, if you don't believe me, you can read reports of our own diplomats sent there by Roosevelt, who said exactly the same thing.
Thank you. Well, this is – so, Tony, you're presenting let's fast forward on the continuity here, because as you said, you have the 1800s, then the 20s, you know, the 1900s, the 20th century. And why don't you go ahead and fast forward up to through Felix Rohatyn, this particular figure that's very active right now. He was just mentioned as part of the behind Schwarzenegger. But to what happened in New York City to show the character of this in like 1975 to 82 when Felix Rohatyn headed up this control board.
Yeah. Well, let me just first say that the one of the most senior partners in Lazare Frères Paris at the time when the French fascists essentially brought in the Nazis in 1940, and the secret as to why France could fall in 6 weeks to an enemy army, which had never happened before, was that the French fascists opened the door for them. led by Lazare, because they realized that was the only way to get rid of the Third Republic and install fascism in France. But nevertheless, André Maillard, who was a senior partner of Lazare Paris, had to flee as a Jew from the Nazis, whom he himself had brought in effect, and fled to New York, took over Lazare Frères in New York. And then later, after the war, he picked up a Jewish refugee from Vienna, Austria, Felix Rohatyn. His family had originally come from Galicia, and made him his successor in place of André Maillard's son, Philippe, who refused to do it. So he was the handpicked successor of André Maillard, who was a kingpin as associate manager of Lazare, say, in 1938 through 40. He was a kingpin in bringing fascism to power throughout Europe in the period up to 1945. He chose Felix Rohatyn as his handpicked successor. And one of the many things Rohatyn did out of Lazare was this New York financial dictatorship of Big Mac in the 1970s and 80s. The means, I mean, it's an analogy may sound far-fetched, but there's a certain similarity. The means used to bring about this banker's dictatorship over New York was refusing loans to the city. The syndicate, the Wall Street syndicate, refused to make any loan to New York City to drive it into effective bankruptcy and into the hands of this unelected banker's dictatorship, Big Mac, where they got a bill through the state legislature that Big Mac was the government. And, in fact, elected municipal officials could be brought on trial for refusing to go along with the orders of Big Mac, regardless of what their constituents or their laws said. So, and it was under this circumstance that Rohatyn deliberately cut down the size and population of New York. I mean, one of the many means we document in this pamphlet is arson. That a city agency operating, it gives the name of the agency in there, I don't remember, but a city agency operating under the aegis of Big Mac would telephone the fire department and say, well, we're doing redevelopment in this area. Don't be too fast to answer fire alarms there. And then a bunch of fires would be set, clearing the way for so-called urban redevelopment, gentrification, driving out the inhabitants and replacing them by high-rises for millionaires and things of that sort. So that's one of the means that Rohatyn's unelected banker's dictatorship did in New York for this kind of thing.
Right. And as Tony said, you can see in this dossier Richard Freeman has here that of the 17 public hospitals in New York City, 5 were shut down under Rohatyn. Of the enrollment in the public university system, 40% went down.
Was cut.
Tuition fees were imposed, and there were 40% fewer students. On and on with the firefighters, the police, everything else.
Sanitation, transit, you name it.
Right. So, and there have been many versions of this. This, I don't know that this was the model, but it was, after all, New York City. I'm sure it was the biggest ever. So Congress did it to Washington, D.C. to shut down D.C. General. The state of Pennsylvania has done it with Pittsburgh. They called it a distress city. Cleveland, you know, et cetera. So this now, however, we're in a situation where this is what's before us as the national, what stands to be imposed nationally unless we stop the whole gang, the whole effort. And let me ask you in this regard to Tony to draw out one thing. Mr. Rohatyn, of course, goes around, as they say in Texas, presenting false friendly forms of it. He doesn't say we're going to have a dictatorship and we're going to kill off 25% of everyone who lives here. But he had a very key opinion column that was published in mid-December, I think, calling for mass infrastructure development. Could you just say something about this?
In the Washington Post. Well, he tried to attach his name to programs for rebuilding the economy and emerging out of the current depression through building of infrastructure, which is associated with Lyndon LaRouche, thinking that if he came along and said me too on this, that people would find it safer to associate with a Rohatyn than with a LaRouche. So this way he set himself up to try to prevent what LaRouche has been pushing, which is basically an updated version of a Franklin Roosevelt New Deal for the present Depression circumstance. I mean, Rohatyn is trying to prevent that. Rohatyn has been an enemy of LaRouche for many years. At the time of the Big Mac in the 1970s, again, it was LaRouche who stood on the other side against that dictatorship for, instead of abolishing manufacture in New York, for strengthening manufacture in New York along with municipal infrastructure and so forth, instead of getting rid of them. So it represents Rohatyn again to trying to stand in the way of LaRouche, because ultimately we'll either have the kind of solution LaRouche is pushing, or we'll have the sort of fascism for which Rohatyn stands, admittedly without saying so in exactly those words.
Right. Well, let's take this to two places. First, I want to ask Joe something and then turn to Cynthia. Sticking with Felix Rohatyn as a figure for the process that's actually was what Tony's describing, and go back to his record in South America, in this case of Pinochet's Chile dictatorship. But first, Joe, this business of infrastructure, you were mentioning Schwarzenegger. He just gave a State of the Union address, right, with this false-friendly infrastructure talk. How would you describe it out there in California?
Exactly, yeah. What he's proposing essentially is around $68 billion worth of California state bonds, which would be issued. Along with that, there would be some more for a grand total, I think, of around over $200 billion worth of infrastructure projects, which is needed desperately here in California. But the problem is that it's the payments for it would come from tolls, from different kinds of state fees, and ultimately would all depend on the ability of California itself to pay it off.
Right. So so we hear the talk, and it's not even the devil in the detail. We know who's behind Schwarzenegger and something. It's like saying Big Mac will restore the city, which is
what happened to him was he had been running all these other operations over the last 2 years. He came in a pretty suspicious way to begin with, and then ever since then he's been trying to kind of manipulate things. And initially he started off with a program to cut everything, to cut the budget, to cut health care, cut education, and the whole point was that he said he had the stomach to go all the way, and he would do more, have more austerity, fiscal austerity, than had been had in the government before him, this guy Pete Wilson, which is actually two governors back. And so he was supposed to have the stomach to kill people. And he said that he knew there were lives behind the numbers, but that he had to do his job.
Right.
So this guy wasn't hiding much. And then when you get around to the point of these referendums that he held recently, he lost. He was defeated very massively on all four of his initiatives. And typical Hollywood, he came out and tried to manipulate people, kind of trick them, pull some Hollywood games, and now he's supposed to be the new reformed Arnold who understands what the people want and these kinds of things. So it's pretty disgusting out here.
That's great. It sounds like you're taking care of it. Well, speaking of disgusting, then, Cynthia, do you want to take Felix Rohatyn and his record backwards to the 1970s when he was active then directly in fascism?
Going back to the September 11th, 1973 coup in Chile, in which the government of Salvador Allende, the socialist president, was overthrown in a bloody coup, and General Augusto Pinochet took over as the head of a military junta and ruled for 18 years. The Rohatyn presence there comes in the form of his sitting on the board of the IT&T, International Telegraph and Telephone Company, as Lazard's representative. And in fact, IT&T, I believe, historically had a relationship with Lazard going back to 59 when Harold Janin took over. And IT&T was one of the leading agencies involved in plotting the coup against Allende. Together with, the thing that's really dramatic about Chile is that the forces that we see in action today behind Cheney, various of these synarchist groupings come together in one location to produce this fascist coup and a government which was, in fact, a replica of Hitler, including the most hideous repression and murder, kidnapping, torture, disappearances of people. And you had IT&T with Rohatyn sitting on the board, I believe, starting in 69. Going back to 64, IT&T was involved, and keeping in mind the Lazard connection, in trying to prevent Allende from being elected in 1964 when he also ran for president. Then in 1970, IT&T, you had Henry Kissinger directly from Washington, from the Nixon administration, saying, we cannot have this man become the president of Chile. You know, he was a socialist. This is the great Marxist threat that will take over all of Latin America if this happens. And then, very interestingly, the issue of Carl Schmitt, who is very active today in the Federalist Society, also arises in Chile at exactly the same time, because one of his leading, a lawyer, a young lawyer who was a follower of Carl Schmitt, was a key figure in, really from day one, coming into the Pinochet government as a legal advisor and writing the arguments and ultimately being the author of the 1980 Constitution to legitimize and justify the coup along the lines of Carl Schmitt's thinking of the need for the Führer, the strong leader, under emergency conditions when constitutional rights have to be abrogated. And this Jaime Guzman, who was the Schmitt ideologue, was himself a fascist, I mean, admirer of Franco, and used a lot of the arguments of Schmitt's followers in Spain, the legal arguments, to justify the need for this fascist coup. And then the other element here, if you think of George Shultz, who's really the godfather of the Bush administration policy, especially the privatization of Social Security, George Shultz was right in there, also from the get-go, promoting the University of Chicago economic policy, which was imposed by the Pinochet government and, in fact, was installed at the Catholic University in Santiago, where this Jaime Guzman character was studying law.
What a nest. Hold on. I want to just get rid of, that is to say, make a few program
sure.
announcements we do right now.
Sure.
And let's continue that very
sure.
thing. We just remind people, this is the LaRue Show, weekly from 3 to 4 Eastern Time. And today's January 14th, 2006. But we invite you to call in, especially to get this current dossier we're talking about that's in this mass circulation pamphlet, LaRouche Pack pamphlet, called Children of Satan 4, Cheney's Schmittlerian Drive for Dictatorship, and also the January 11th webcast transcription will be available by about January 16th or so. And you can find that by calling or by checking on LaRouche Pack itself, www.larouchepac.com. Or look where you're listening to this by internet, or it's archived at larouchepub.com. And call. I'll give you the toll-free number inside the United States. You dial 1-888. That's 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. And I'll just give you this one advance notice. January 21st, on Saturday, 2006, we're going to have people involved in the study of the case of Baltimore, where you have actual rates of death, rates of disease associated directly with the last decades of deindustrialization. This has to be stopped, and people should understand the processes involved. We'll have Dr. Ned Rosinsky and some others of the team. involved in this study commissioned by Mr. LaRouche. But we're going back today to this situation in Chile in the after 1973, and you're saying the whole gang was there, George Shultz, Felix Rowe, and the University of Chicago.
Sorted group. And this Jaime Guzman, who claimed to be a very, devout Catholic, was nonetheless one of the his chief argument was that violence was necessary, that the junta had to use the utmost harshness and energy is what the terms he used to deal with the so-called Marxist threat. And this apparatus that was created with Kissinger's direct involvement, this Operation Condor, that was a vehicle not just in Chile but throughout all of the southern cone of South America at that time where there were other dictatorships in power, with ex-Nazis as advisors to carry out the most brutal repression, murder, torture, kidnappings, throwing people out of airplanes, etc. And all on the pretext of dealing with the Marxist threat, but, you know, trade unionists, teachers, professors, students, anybody who was deemed a problem were the targets. And in this whole Schmidtian doctrine, there was a group that Jaime Guzman belonged to, which was a group of Schmidtian like-minded individuals, which said very explicitly the best way for an authoritarian government to function is to have a homogeneous population. In other words, nobody who doesn't think alike, right? We all have to think the same. Anybody who thinks differently, goodbye. So it's really a very dramatic case study. And for Americans to look at that, I can say later also the fact that Chile's having elections tomorrow.
Oh, please say no.
Right. And this is directly relevant because one of the people running as the presidential candidate, Sebastián Piñera, for the representing the Right Wing Alliance, a coalition of Socialist Party and other Christian democracy have been ruling Chile pretty much since 1990 when democracy, in quotes, was restored. But Sebastián Piñera is the brother of the infamous José Piñera, who privatized the social security system in Chile and who was the model for George Bush and George Shultz for the Social Security privatization drive here in the U.S. And people remember we exposed that last year very forcefully, that this is the Chile model, which destroyed any sense of protecting the general welfare, robbed people's pensions. We have many friends in Chile who've been fighting for years to restore some kind of decent pension system to the country because nobody can retire with any hope of having, you know, any existence worth living. So Piñera is the brother of José Piñera. He also is backed by the party that was founded by Jaime Guzman, which was the real Pinochet support apparatus. He claims to represent the center, but he made his billions under the Pinochet government with the help of this whole disgusting financial apparatus that was just looted the country. And there certainly is no question what he would do in terms of economic policy or anything else were he to become president, including it's rumored that he might bring José Piñera back in as his finance minister, to run the country. So we have a lot of friends in Chile who were very excited by what our mobilization here around this issue of Carl Schmitt and getting out this pamphlet and who got out our emails and press releases and articles to a very extensive network of, you know, tens of thousands of trade unionists and others to give them a sense of what's going on here in the U.S. in particular. But also that we're watching their situation very closely.
Right. I understand that there's been quite a firestorm with the kind of thing you're describing, and what Mr. LaRouche has been saying has been gotten out widely. So whatever happens precisely in the election tomorrow, this expose is all throughout Washington already, right?
Right. Yes, and the LYM actually in Argentina also kind of flanked with what we did from here, and they bombarded the Chilean Congress media and, you know, sort of crossfired with the same information. So, and we have gotten some responses from, in fact, from some youth groups inside Chile to what they did. So it's really fun. It's we have some good input there.
This is, I'm sure it's the principle of the flank. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask, unless Joe wants to chime in here, so forth. Tony, if we could get back on this. So Cynthia's discussed Carl Schmitt, this jurist who gave the rationalizations for Hitler. And when it comes to the people connected to that kind of thinking today, it's come up in the name of what? The unitary presidency.
Unitary executive.
Yeah, unitary executive. But do you want to draw out those connections and say anything
sure.
about this federalist society what we're up against now?
Yeah. Well, Schmitt was a German law professor who was a fascist, particularly of the Mussolini variety. He was a very strong supporter of Mussolini's Italian fascism. He was also a Hispanicist, if that's the right word. I mean, he was a he spoke fluent Spanish and had numerous correspondents in Spain. So he provided, as I understand it, he and his friends and his correspondents, in fact, you just passed me a list of the correspondents, he and his Spanish correspondents provided the law and legal rationale for the Franco government, which was also fascist. And in Germany, he became, up until 1938 when he was thrown out, he became the leading legal authority in Nazi Germany. Now, the reason he was thrown out, we can come to if you like. It wasn't, well, it's of interest. But in any case, until 1938, he was the leading legal authority. And what he did was give the reason, the legal argument, so-called. Cynthia alluded to this in a way. He gave the legal argument why Hitler had to be an absolute dictator with no checks and balances, no right of appeal, no nothing. Which particularly, I mean, Hitler was made dictator under the emergency provisions of the Weimar Constitution, which had been drafted by Schmitt at the time of the Reichstag fire in early 1934. It was considered a national security emergency, like the September 11th, 2001 attack in New York City, although it had actually been carried out by the Nazis themselves. A mentally ill Dutch lunatic was tried and convicted for doing it, but it's pretty clear that it was done by Hermann Göring. And if this lunatic had any role, he didn't know what he was doing. So they used that to say Hitler has to be dictator, much as Cheney and friends tried to do after September 11th, 2001, without complete success, although they got the Patriot Act through. Now, Schmitt had a long career after World War II. He lived into the 1980s, even though he refused to sign the denazification pledge. He was barred from teaching in Germany. He nevertheless continued to live there and corresponded extensively with Americans and Spanish people and people in South America, among others. The group in the U.S., which continues and advocates this Schmittian, or what our pamphlet calls Schmittlerian tradition, is the Federalist Society, of which the present nominee for Supreme Court Justice Alito is a member. And as you alluded to, they continue Schmitt's doctrine under the name of the Unitary Executive, which is, you know, better called the Führerprinzip, that the Führer or Hitler is the absolute leader without possibility of appeal. So that, I mean, after the Reichstag fire, you went to a situation where Hitler was the sole, you know, the sole dictator. His word was law, and he also did things made a point of doing terror and killings outside of the government, just to make that clear. I mean, which the Night of the Long Knives, where in one night he killed off thousands of his opponents through goon squads, was really the first taste of that for many people, which, again, Carl Schmitt justified in his with his legal theories. And perhaps we could at some point get Cynthia again on the Schiele aspect of that, because she has more on it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the it's interesting to look at the concept that Jaime Guzman used when he put together this constitution, where he used the term a constituting power, or constituent power is the way it's often translated, which basically is the idea that you have to destroy everything that came before, you know, and any pre-existing judicial order or order of society has to be completely dismantled, again, on the basis of these emergency conditions. And this is where you get some really interesting commentary from this group of legal, like-minded legal thinkers in Chile, who simply said that, rather very directly referenced the U.S. Constitution and said, we can have no the rights of man are not inalienable. We cannot have a separation of powers. The right to appeal does not exist. There's no reason. In fact, Guzman himself said this. Why have people go to court to appeal their situation if they've been arrested? The only person that can decide that is Pinochet, right? So you get, and these were all principles that were incorporated into this 1980 Constitution under the phrase used was protected democracy. Well, who were the protectors of the democracy? The Pinochet and the military, right? And everything else, immediately after the coup, Congress was shut down, political parties were banned. And then at the same time, you had this economic policy imposed, which dismantled labor rights, labor unions, labor organizing, and then, you know, picking people off, arresting them. But this question of using violence, one of the people that has written a lot about Jaime Guzman, he said, well, what they really proposed was juridical violence. Which was, again, we have to get rid of these people because they're the troublemakers. And it's really important to emphasize the way in which this thing was so carefully monitored from the U.S. side and from this whole nasty grouping of Kissinger, ITT. And it's at the same time that Rohatyn was sitting on the board, the other director of ITT was John McCone, who was a former head of the CIA and a very close friend of Alan Dulles, who was one of the other key people orchestrating this whole thing. And it's really just a remarkable story of complete and utter destruction of this dismantling of this country in every way, economic, political, and such that Salvador Allende, when he was speaking at the UN in 1972, in December of 72, to the General Assembly, documented ITT, their role in some detail, you know, that they had an 18-point plan, because Chile was really strangled after the 73 coup economically. It was cut off from all aid, all U.S., Exim Bank, World Bank, strangled economically, complete economic upheaval. I mean, it was completely isolated. There were strikes inside the country in the copper mines, which was the main economic activity in the country, which affected their exports, their balance of payments. I mean, it was just a complete, we're going
after
to destroy.
After Allende was elected.
Yeah, after 73. I'm sorry, after 70. Right. And it absolutely is. This question of Spain also is interesting because of the connection between Chile, the Schmidt followers, and the Spanish followers, which I've also discovered in Argentina and elsewhere. And it was a very vast network. So.
Well, one thing, we have a question that's come in from California from Tim. I'll mention that in just a second. But I wanted to turn anyway to Joe on, because what Cynthia and Tony are describing in this history and this continuity and even the same figures involved, like George Shultz, and that we have it stateside right here, nose to nose in California and all across the country, what we're facing. And there is a view in some of these town meetings that have taken place over the holiday period where hundreds of people showed up, like near Washington, D.C., 1,000 showed up to hear Representative Murtha from Pennsylvania speak out on the war policy against the White House. But so there's a feeling that the population doesn't want these guys, doesn't want the Federalist Society, doesn't want Alito, certainly doesn't want fascism. And, Joe, from your organizing, you had a report from yesterday. You might go into that. And what Tim from California asks is, well, what's involved? Can we keep Alito off the Supreme Court or not? We'll get to that in a minute. But what do you find on the streets, Joe?
Okay, well, the thing that I was most struck by actually came out this morning in a discussion from what we had done last night. And it was it gets right to what LaRouche has been talking about recently, with this question of dynamics. And I would say that the most important thing that we've been trying to do is create a kind of dynamic situation or be able to add to the dynamics of the nation politically in such a way where we can assist in shifting what's happening in Washington. And it came out yesterday at this one brief run-in where someone who was being approached at their car window rolls down the window, you know, and sees the sign that one of our organizers has around her neck. And it says the sign has a picture of Dick Cheney. And he's essentially, it's a figure, a Hitler figure, including the mustache, with a face of Dick Cheney. And above it, it reads, Alito salutes. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is that, you know, he's apparently has an extremely emotional reaction, which she couldn't tell why. You know, the organizer didn't know which direction the guy was thinking in. But he had a very emotional response to her saying, hey, let's cut Bush's Dick Cheney off. And so, you know, she's trying to figure it out. The guy's rolling down his window, and he says, do you have any idea, you know, what these guys have done for you? And, you know, referring to Bush and Cheney. And so she says, oh, are you kidding? Have you seen the fascism of this government? What about the Alito nomination? And the guy responds, Alito? Alito's great. He's been fighting for you to have the freedoms to be out here on the street. And he gets infuriated, and he starts spinning, and he's yelling and stuff like that. And then, you know, she says, at the same time that he was saying that, she says, yeah, but he's a member of the Federalist Society. Do you know what that is? And as soon as he heard the word Federalist Society, he turned around and snapped, I am with the Federalist Society. Okay. You know, and this guy's infuriated. And so then she says, so you're probably a worshiper of Carl Schmitt, too. And the guy, he kind of was a little bit humbled at that point, and he had his 13-year-old boy in the car, and he looked over and whispered, no, I'm not a supporter of Carl Schmitt, and then he drove away. So that's a taste of what's going on here. But I would say more generally, everybody we talked to, they're not for this kind of thing. They're pretty pissed off, and most of them remember the first three Children of Satan pamphlets we put out. In fact, most people here in L.A. have gotten one of them. So I think there's a pretty big rejection of it.
That's great. Well, it could be that the fact that some of the senators didn't really do what they could do. They had too much fruitcake over the holidays. I don't know. But if they come back and have a caucus on Wednesday, the Democratic caucus, and if some of the Republicans see some courage in action, I think things could really happen. But do you have any more update on this, Tony, on Alito or him in particular? You could characterize, you've looked at some of the kinds he says, it's just evasion or lies.
Yeah, he's refused to answer all the questions. And basically the senators have been much too polite with him. And, I mean, what Lynn says, what LaRouche says, is, as Marsh implied, is that they're really out of touch with the mood of the country. I mean, certainly a majority of senators oppose him, but they do it in a very cautious, well-mannered way, which is not going to work. And from what we've seen, and certainly Joe seems to have seen it, that's not the attitude of their constituents at all.
Right. Well, let me ask you, anyone on this more, but on the degree of one thing this Children of Satan 4 goes into is the, I think Jeff Steinberg put it about the degree to which the Feddies have marched through our institutions on the Supreme Court. I mean, the Federalist Society, as Joe was just talking about. But these Carl Schmitt thinking characters, these Hitler's is the way to go characters. Where else would you say, Tony, or, I mean, what do you think? I can't remember where. There's a chart just to keep track of it. But what are some of the key ones that you would point out, or their influence? Let's look at it like that. Because this was only formed in the 1980s. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
March pretty quickly. Well, the pamphlet identifies the top three as the torture trio. Addington, who is now Cheney's chief of staff because Lewis Libby was indicted, had to resign. And the guy who wrote the memos that torture was legal, Timothy Flanagan, deputy White House counsel, key in the development of the torture memos, and John Yoo, who from a relatively low-level position in the Justice Department sent a whole series of memos that the executive need not obey the law. That if Congress, for instance, legislates on the FISA legislation, that you have a special court to give an okay for national security wiretaps. The president, who himself signed the law and himself went to Congress to agitate for the law and then signed the law, doesn't have to obey the law, which he hasn't done.
Well, one thing about just switching to Chile for a minute, people have asked before the show, Cynthia, I mean, Pinochet, there are those who are very much active that Pinochet should come before the courts. Can you, status of that?
Oh, well,
what's coming out around this?
He is accused of, well, in terms of specific crimes where they've actually been able to get his, he's a former head of state, and he was also a lifetime senator, which was one of the provisions of this 1980 Constitution, where they appointed 8 senators or 9 senators out of 32 or 3, so that, you know, and they usually were of the right political persuasion to back the junta. But he had to have his immunity stripped by the court in order to be prosecuted for any crime. He has now been indicted on, I think, 2 specific crimes, one relating to the $30 million that he stashed away in foreign bank accounts in Riggs Bank and Citibank and various others, not to mention offshore financial havens. So he's charged with that, tax evasion, creating false documents, false passports, etc. And then he also was recently indicted on something called Operation Colombo, which was one of these massacres of leftist militants in the 1970s. And a third case is coming up called the Caravan of Death. He's 90 years old, and I don't know how long he'll be around to be prosecuted. But there have been people working literally for, you know, decades, 2 decades, to get him to the point where he can go to court. And the combination of cases against him in terms of illegality, the financial side of it alone is extraordinary in terms of money laundering, weapons trafficking, drug money laundering or drug trafficking. All of this unbelievable financial operation went on throughout, and not to mention the privatization of all the state sector companies, which in itself was an incredible scam. That's one of the ways in which people like Piñera made millions and millions of dollars, and the private pension funds. So the hope is that he will go to court very soon. There have been all sorts of legal arguments to try to keep him out of court, but it looks quite likely that he will go at least on one of these 3 cases fairly soon. So that's
right. Well, I mean, what you describe, it's cut and dried. It's the definition, right, dictatorship, the Führer, and so forth and so on. And let's now just shade into something else related to that. We have a few more minutes. If someone wants an email or if Joe wants to chime in, that's good too. But, Tony, let me ask you, because Lazard Brothers, you've described the political history and these straight extreme cases like Chile or what happened in Big Mac in New York City with Felix Rowett and so forth. But all along, Lazard's activities in terms of cartels or in terms of deregulation, I mean, one thing comes to mind because of the West Virginia miners situation. I believe that Wilbur Ross, the scavenger of the who created ISG International Steel Group, then ICG Internet. I believe he's so-called former Lazard. Wilbur Ross was Lazard. I don't know if there is such a thing as former, and I will check that out. But even if he ain't, and I do think that's to be true, we'll check that out. But what characterizes the Lazard outlook in globalization or cartels or the cartels of the famous periods you were discussing of the 20s? Would you say about that?
It is cartelization. I mean, as people know, the 20s was characterized by a huge cartelization of industry all over the world. And then, you know, with the Roosevelt administration, at least insofar as the United States, tried to put this under control by regulations passed under the Roosevelt administrations. And similarly, the U.S. as the, you know, the allied powers, at least the U.S. and supposedly the other allied powers, recognized the role of the German cartels in Nazism and the mandate of the occupation was to decartelize German industries, which were cartelized in conjunction with things like General Electric, Standard Oil of the United States.
They were interconnected.
They were in the same cartels before the war and right into the war, but really it didn't exactly happen that way. Because of the interference of the investment houses in New York. The German industry was not cartelized in the way that it was supposed to be, decartelized in the way that it was supposed to be during the occupation. And then with Lazard, as you implied, with Lazard in the lead from the 1960s and then increasingly through the 70s and in other forms in the 80s and right into the present, you've had the epidemic of mergers and acquisitions and then superseded by other forms of the same thing, which have totally recartelized U.S. industry and agriculture, and Lazard and Rohatyn in particular as an individual more than anyone else was in the lead of that throughout. So what he did was, recartelization of the United States in conjunction, as you say, with globalization, which, I mean, we don't have probably time to discuss it completely, but the current name for world fascist empire is globalization.
Right. So to think that we can have a fair version or level playing field with Lazard and with these cartels, it's a non-starter from beginning. But that's what, of course, has been promoted as the so-called left side of the right side of let's live with how are we going to live with globalization. So,
you know, in the same speech that Allende made in 72, he described IT&T as a global cartel,
exactly,
which functions beyond borders. No Congress monitors it. It's not audited by any agency, any representative body, and is a threat to, I mean, destroys sovereign nation states, which I thought was a kind of insightful comment.
Yeah,
to make
a law unto itself.
Right. Well, I think this we have a minute and a half, and that's precious to go. But I think we've defined the enemy and what we're up against. And in answer to the Californians' question, can Alito be kept off? It's the kind of thing we're talking about, making it known and organizing, that's going to do the job. And look, in the final minute, Joe, we turn to you in Los Angeles. You have a cadre school coming up in a couple weeks, I think. But what do you want to say about your perspective on organizing today through Tuesday or the next 2 weeks for the recruitment, whatever you want to say?
Well, we're not going to stop even then, Cynthia, Marcia.
Okay.
We don't plan on stopping. This is part of an overall recruitment. And one thing I was struck by earlier, Tony, was when you said that 40% of the university enrollment was destroyed in New York under Big Mac, under Felix Rohatyn.
Tuition was imposed for the first time, and they cut back 40%, yes.
So the enrollment wasn't down, it was the cost that you
were... No, the enrollment was cut back 40% and tuition was imposed for the people lucky enough to get in.
here in California, the only way the Sunarchists could possibly achieve that kind of catastrophe would be that if the schools refused to take LaRouche's and the LaRouche Youth Movement's method of education into the school system, then we're probably going to recruit more than that many into our movement.
Right.
Well, I guess that's the last word, and that's a very good word. And I thank everyone for participating in the LaRouche Show today. It's January 14th. And don't forget January 21st from 3 to 4 p.m. in the afternoon Eastern Time on www.larouchepub.com. Thank you, Cynthia, Joe, and
Thanks.
Tony, and everyone else.